Hello everyone, and welcome to another episode of Radio Free Nintendo, brought to you by NintendoWorldReport.com. I'm your host, Mike Sklenz. My cohorts this week are site director, Steven Rodriguez.
What's up?
And previews editor, Carl Castaneda.
What's up, everybody?
We had a little bit of trouble trying to figure out a feature for this week, so we will be answering a bunch of listener mail.
Yeah.
Which is always good.
Yeah, we got in a lot this week.
We've been getting more and more, so please be sure to send in your questions. If we ever don't have anything to talk about again, we'll just answer them all.
Yay. We've done that before.
So yep. I want to start out with what have you guys been playing this week?
Well, let's see. We've been playing Mario Kart 64 for Virtual Console. We went over to Dan Blower's house, and Mike Cole came over too. We were playing Mario Kart, and 1UP said that game wasn't worth it.
Ooh,
what's wrong with them?
It is.
I don't
awesome.
Know.
It's totally worth it.
I had a chance to play it in a movie theater a couple months, maybe a year ago. We have a campus movie theater, and we did a tournament where we played Mario Kart. Or not really a tournament, just like a play day where people could come in and play Mario Kart 64 on the in the movie theater, and it wasn't as good as I remember it.
Well, I took the game over to a friend of mine's house this weekend. It was his 18th birthday, and there were a whole bunch of people gathered there. And next to Wii Sports, that game freaking dominated. Like, everyone wanted to play Mario Kart.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's one of the better games in the series.
Oh yeah, it's probably my second favorite to obviously Super Mario Kart, but yeah, it's awesome multiplayer still. I mean, we're playing 4-player races. We're playing battle mode. We'll block fort. Can't go wrong with block fort.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, I don't want to trash talk it because I still think it's very good. But I think I've been somewhat spoiled by Mario Kart DS because
I think it's easily
the best.
I think Mario Kart DS is definitely better than Mario Kart 64.
Better than all of them.
Yeah,
in my opinion.
Absolutely, I think it's probably my favorite one in the series. I think it's the definitive game in the Mario Kart series, but obviously also in visuals as well. But Mario Kart 64 still has enough of what made MKDS great that it's still really fun to play.
Yeah,
yeah, it's got block for it.
Yeah,
hey, that's all you need.
What about you? What about you, Carl? Apart from Mario Kart, what have you been playing?
I've been playing more of Hotel Dusk, which I'm actually starting to see that when you start out, there are very few ways to get a game over. And actually, in the first two chapters, I didn't get any game overs. But now, actually, I've gotten like three or four, which is good in the sense that, okay, there's actually some difficulty to this game. Like, you have to actually pay attention to what's going on. But it sucks in that if you get a game over, it returns you to the last checkpoint, which could be anywhere between, 20 in-game minutes to 30 in-game minutes.
Hmm.
What sucks about that is, okay, 20 minutes, that doesn't seem so bad, but in-game minutes and real-world minutes are, like, there's a huge discrepancy there, meaning 20 in-game minutes may have been something like 45 minutes for you. So that's kind of a big flaw for me. Fortunately, I save a lot anyway. Like, I'm one of those people who's, like, a compulsive saver. So luckily, I can always just reset the game and get back to where I was without any trouble. But it still is a great game. Still is a lot of reading, but still is very fun.
I've been doing something similar.
Yeah.
Like that, I'm still playing Link to the Past, and I'm not much further now. I'm on the third dungeon in the Dark World. But I do that a lot when I need to, like when I'm tired and I don't want to travel across. I just save the game and restart back at Link's house or back at the Sanctuary. It's just faster.
Absolutely. Other than that, I finished the story mode for Dragon Ball Z Budokai Tenkaichi 2, which is a lot longer than you would think, because it encompasses all of Dragon Ball Z, all of Dragon Ball GT, and most of the movies.
Well, that doesn't surprise me, because it takes like 3, 4, 5, 6 episodes for 10 minutes to pass.
Yeah.
So,
why should the game be any different?
Well, it's just that you think a fighting game story mode wouldn't be that long. You think that most of the longevity in the game would be in its multiplayer.
Yeah, but it's Dragon Ball Z.
Yeah,
that's an overriding factor here.
It definitely poured at least like 15 to 20 hours into the story mode. And
hey, Carl,
yeah.
How many Dragon Ball Z characters does it take to screw in a light bulb?
Probably 4.
Only one. It just takes 4 weeks.
Yeah.
Right.
Pretty much.
Well, yeah, there is the infamous, fight. Dragon Ball Z fans will know what I'm talking about here. And everyone else will just be completely confused. There was the infamous fight in the Frieza saga where supposedly the planet was going to blow up in 5 minutes, but it took about 12 episodes for that to happen.
Yeah.
But, yeah, and there's a lot of that here. for DBZ fans, I can give it a recommendation. Everybody else, wait for the review to see why you should probably rent it. What about you, Mike?
I've still been playing Link to the Past. Because I still haven't, I've still never beaten it, so I'm taking my time through it.
Now, you told me that you don't think it's the best game ever made.
No, I was talking to Steven about it earlier, too, that I think there's a lot of... I mean, it's still very good, and I don't want to harp on it. And I know some people think it's the best Super Nintendo game, but I would... Even after playing it, I can still tell you that I think Super Metroid is better. But what I don't like about Zelda is sometimes there'll be, like, something you absolutely need to do for the game, and it'll be hidden under, like, a rock or something, and the rock looks like every other rock in Hyrule, and there's nothing to differentiate it, and there's nothing to tell you you should go check out any rock, let alone this rock. And it's just, like, you could be stuck in Hyrule for 2 hours cutting down every bush and looking at under every rock just to figure out what to do next, and I kind of don't like that. But on the flip side, I think the new Zelda games all hold your hand too much, and they're always telling you exactly what to do, and things are painfully obvious. So there's no happy medium for me in Zelda. It's either too easy or too, not difficult, but just frustrating because it takes too long to figure out what to do.
Yeah, tedious. But it's worth it.
It's still extremely good. I'm not going to say it's bad.
Yeah, we don't.
And
need
it
that.
Is harder. Like, I mean, I don't think I never get down to, like, two or three hearts in 3D Zelda games, and I'm, like, constantly hearing the beep beep, you're about to die in Link to the Past, because the game kicks your ass.
Nice.
And I like that. I mean, that's all I've been playing, so I guess we can move on to our news now. Biggest news this week was Konami's Gamers Day, where they unveiled quite a few new games. They unveiled a new DDR game where you will be both dancing and shaking remotes at the same time.
Yeah.
They've got Wing Island, which they are publishing for Hudson. And then there was that marble game that I can't pronounce. How does it? Yeah, okay. And then I guess you could say their big title is Dewey's Adventure from the Elebits team.
Yeah. I think it looks cool.
Yeah, it seems like it's sort of a platforming game, except the way it's played is you tilt the world like Monkey Ball, and then you play as a little droplet of water who you don't directly control, like I said. You can just, you know, move him around via the environment, and then you can alter his temperature to, you know, if I think I read it on Chris Kohler's blog, Game Life, where it's described as one part where in order to get up a hill, you jump Dewey into a puddle of water, and then you tilt the whole world so that all the water tilts, and then you freeze it, because Dewey can alter his temperature to freeze or evaporate. And then when you turn him back to normal, the ice stays in the position that it was, because it's solid now. And you can get up the hill then.
As someone who never played Elebits, but was kind of interested in it, I'm really interested in this game, because I think they're going to take what they learned from Elebits, which was, according to Evan, a mixed game, you know, had its good points, but was overweighed by the bad. I think that they're going to take what they learned from Elebits and make this into what's hopefully a much better game.
And I think it's interesting that Elebits was a game that was pretty much entirely focused on the pointing aspects of the Wii Remote, and this game seems to be entirely focused on the tilt aspect.
Also, I think what's worth mentioning is that Konami has, within 6 months of the Wii's lifespan, you know, already released a new IP and has already announced another new IP. And comparing the fact that they released how many new IPs did they release for GameCube? What, zero?
Yeah, something like that.
I think that's definitely significant.
Yeah, it's good to see them.
It's pretty important too that they're not just coming out with these by the way games. They're coming out with at least one heavy hitter already in DDR.
Yeah, even though it's sort of like a easy franchise thing for them to do, it's still a pretty big deal.
Yeah. And I'm actually really excited about this, not only because it's looking more like a real DDR game instead of the ridiculously easy Mario mix, but I actually see myself having fun doing the old remote shaking and dancing at the same time.
Yeah, so and it's got four player support.
Yeah, it'd be like Samba de Amigo plus DDR.
That's what I was about to say. Like, is that what it's going to be like? That's going to be kind
of
weird.
I don't know if either of you guys ever played Dance Dance Revolution Disney Mix. I'm sure you have, Steven.
Yeah.
But the best thing about that game to me was that it had a battle mode where by doing, like, completing steps properly, you would affect your opponent's side by, like, making the notes scroll faster or slower or making them hidden and stuff like that. And I think that was the best idea ever, and I don't think it ever showed up in another DDR game.
Actually, I think they're gonna have just a ton of modes in this game.
So hopefully that'll come
hottest,
back.
Hottest Party, I think it's called.
Yeah.
Not the best name.
Yeah, but let's hope they have wireless dance mats.
Yeah, that would be nice. I kind of don't think it'll happen. I kind of think they're going to be going through the GameCube ports.
Yeah, so it'll probably just be the same pads as the Mario Mix one, but, you know, rebranded.
Yeah.
What about these? What about the other two games, Kororinpa and Wing Island?
Wing Island is, I guess, just a little flying game.
Yeah, I guess Hudson took that
original tech demo and tried to make a full game out of it. And apparently it's not looking like it's going to work out too well.
Yeah, more of a tech demo. And then the other game is that Marble Mania game.
Kororinpa.
Yeah, which seems a lot like Marble Madness or Monkey Ball.
I would be interested in that. Yeah, Monkey Ball.
I remember having a lot of fun with Kirby's Tilt and Tumble at E3 a couple years ago. When it was called, before it was called Kirby's Tilt and Tumble, it was something else. Oh, now it's going to drive me nuts. And it was great, because you tilted the Game Boy and it affected stuff.
Oh, Roll-O-Rama.
Yes, Roll-O-Rama. You tilted the Game Boy and it affected stuff on the screen on the GameCube. It was a connectivity game, and it was amazing. I loved it, and this seems a lot like that, so I think I might end up picking it up not for $50, but if it's cheap, I'll probably grab it.
You know,
it
would be really nice if you could make your own courses and share them online. Yeah,
the way the screenshots looked, it seemed like it would lend itself to that very well.
Yeah, does Kororinpa have a level editor?
I don't know. We'll have to look into it.
Yeah. I think I heard something about it having one, but don't quote me on that.
That's pretty, I guess all of that is pretty big news, considering, you know, Konami was basically little to no GameCube support, that we already have all these games coming out for the Wii. They obviously see the potential.
Yeah, definitely significant. Now, where are the old mainstays like Namco that had tons of stuff on the GameCube and now has nothing?
They'll get there eventually.
Yeah, they have a lot of DS games, too. I don't think they're giving up anytime soon.
I'll tell you what, though. Final Furlong, not doing it.
So our next story is Telltale Games is, I guess, looking for Wii developers. Carl, can you educate us on this?
Okay, well, Telltale Games, you guys obviously know from the Sam & Max series.
Sweet.
They're requesting employees, or they're hiring employees who have experience with Wii development. I know that doesn't really mean much, but, you know, basically people who would be free, who would be open to working on Wii. What this means, are they bringing Sam & Max to Wii, or are they making a new game for Wii? Who knows? Either way, I think it's going to be great, because the Wii could always use more, you know, adventure games.
My guess would be the latter of a new IP, mostly because Sam & Max is being released episodically on GameTap, and the Wii doesn't really have the hard drive capacity to do something like that.
Very true, and so I don't think we're going to be seeing episodic content like that. But I think that we might see it released like as an anthology after the whole thing is done with.
Yeah, that could happen. I wouldn't be surprised. I don't know how do they play like the old Sam & Max games where it's like a point and click sort of thing?
That's from what I understand, yeah. Okay. I read some of it on Chris Kohler's blog a while back, and it seems like just like the old Sam & Max, but with a visual facelift. And but even from a visual standpoint, it doesn't look like it would be too intensive for the Wii to handle, so I think they could definitely just do a straight port.
Mm-hmm. That sounds, yeah, that would be good. Sam & Max is good stuff.
Yeah. Oh, it would be great to see it on the console.
Our next story is Square has said recently that they would have loved to do Final Fantasy XI on the Wii, but they can't, mostly because of friend codes. So is this another strike against friend codes here?
I don't think it's just friend codes. I think it's just Nintendo's online structure in general.
Yeah.
Yeah, the fact that there's no hard drive also.
Well, I don't think the hard drive... Well, yeah, the hard drive might be an issue.
How are they going to do patches if there's no hard drive?
Well, they don't have to do caches. You know, the Wii can load pretty fast.
But you can't patch it either, and MMORPGs usually have a ton of patches.
Yeah, I suppose you're right. But, yeah, I thought that this whole friend code thing was supposed to be done and over with. I thought that the Pokemon game would use it because of the DS game.
It is, kind of, but Nintendo really doesn't like people interacting with each other who aren't, like, specific friends, like playing a game.
Yeah.
I mean, they do with stuff like Mario Kart. You can play against random people, but there's no way to communicate with them, and, you know, with an MMORPG, you sort of need to be able to communicate with everyone.
Right, well, you need to be able to connect to kind of almost a proprietary server. Basically, you need to channel it through just Square servers. We saw that with the Xbox version of the game, where it wasn't specifically an Xbox Live game. If I remember, it actually went straight through to Square.
Yep.
I don't think Nintendo would like that, just because it would mean that it might issue...
I don't think Nintendo's hosting Wi-Fi games on their own servers, are they?
We don't know that because there aren't any games to host. Yet.
All right. I mean, for DS games, I mean, I don't think they're hosting games on their own servers.
No, Activision's hosting the Tony Hawk games on their own
servers. Right, yeah, so I don't think Nintendo would have any problem with going to Square's servers. I think they have more of a problem.
So that's not that's not the issue. I think it's just that I think Square wants the online network to be similar, not to, you know, how you can do it on the PC, you can communicate to anybody. You know, they had to make some changes to get the game working on the 360, but it's what you can do on the 360 is pretty much what you'd be able to do playing the game online on a PC and even on the PS2. There's really no structure there yet for the Wii.
Exactly.
That's probably what they're wanting. They want to know. They want to put the game on the Wii, but they can't yet because they don't know what they need to do. That's probably why they're playing.
So is this a repeat of the GameCube's online strategy where it's just there and people can do it if they want?
It's the opposite. It's the opposite, actually, because what you have on GameCube is that there's no structure at all. Basically, anyone can come in and do whatever they want. Whereas with Wii, it seems like it's so specific that some people are left out because they don't meet the quote-unquote standards.
No. Like, with the GameCube, people can come in and do anything they want. Well, they didn't. So that's what he's asking, is that because Nintendo isn't letting developers do what they want this time, is it going to be GameCube all over?
Right, it's same result with a different reason behind it. The first time is Nintendo didn't provide any support because there was literally no online structure, and this time around we have an online structure, but it still seems like Nintendo's not really providing a lot of documentation or support to the developer on how to do it. It's either they're with you hand in hand, like Tony Hawk, where they're like, you know, you can tell Nintendo has a serious influence on how Tony Hawk, you know, they obviously were there and they were like, we want you to do this game. The Activision guys didn't say, we want to put this game online. So it seems that the only games that are getting online are the ones that Nintendo wants to.
What Nintendo does after this, like between now and E3 or even at E3 or even Game Developers Conference, they need to come out right now and say, these are our online games, these are our online partners, this is how it's going to work. If they don't do that soon, just forget it. You know, even if Smash Brothers is online, forget it.
Well, maybe that'll be one of the keynotes, because they do have quite a few Nintendo reps at GDC to give keynotes this year, so hopefully we'll see one of those.
Yeah. All right, so our next story is THQ is bringing WWE games to both the Wii and the DS. Steven, do you want to give us your thoughts?
Yeah, they just announced that this week, and that's going to be... It's one of those things that's inevitable. WWE license is one of the big ones in video games. It's one of the biggest ones for THQ. And they obviously are the type of publisher that will, you know, whore it out to every platform there is. I don't know how the motion controls would work with the Wii, but there would be some pretty cool things you could probably do on the DS.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm pretty sure as far as the Wii goes, you're going to have to, like, shake the remote and nunchuck forward to, like, grab, and maybe you jerk it back to, like, maybe throw them over your shoulders or something. So I'm sure we'll see something like that.
Like, you know, just picture this for the DS game. Have you guys played wrestling games before?
Very, very infrequently.
My experience is pretty limited, but I know that.
Well, you know, like how wrestling goes, the ref goes on the mat, goes 1, 2, 3. Well,
right.
Like you have a special referee match, and in order to count the guy, you have to like touch the touchscreen 3 times. You have to touch him 1, 2, and if you don't want to count the third time, you just don't touch the touchscreen a third time.
Mm-hmm.
And you could use like the microphone to count the guy out. So you get 1, 2, and obviously you could have a wireless multiplayer, maybe even online. But
well,
you know, that
maybe.
Might be wishful thinking.
Yeah.
Has
THQ cool
done any online games on DS? No, right?
I don't think they've ever done online for Nintendo at all, actually.
Okay.
But yeah, so people have been asking us all about that all the time, and now it's official. We just don't know the details, but it will be coming out this year.
Yeah.
That's pretty much a given.
And then our last news story of the week is that Pokemon Diamond and Pearl have done 5 million copies sold in the past 3 months in Japan. Is that right?
Yeah. I think so.
That's incredible.
And they weren't even out 3 months. I mean, they were out 3 months ago, but they came out over the summer. So just in the past 3 months alone, not counting all the people who've already bought it over there, they just sold another 5 million.
You know what I think? I think I was talking to Blowearth about this over the weekend. But Pokemon is so successful that we need to be reminded of how successful it is. We just take it for granted now. It's kind of like there's this middle ground where we just see these games that are successful, and you've got the ones below the game. Like, we have to be like, this game is successful, here's a press release of why it's so successful, remember this game. But Pokemon is like on the other end of the spectrum. It's like, yeah, we all know Pokemon's successful, but then Nintendo needs to remind us how successful
it is. It's like Bill Gates putting out a press release saying, hey guys, I'm still the richest person on the planet, and I just made $10 million more in my sleep.
And then everybody else goes like, oh, yeah, you're right about that. Thanks for reminding us. And then we forget about it like 2 or 3 months later.
Now, unless I'm mistaken, the originals, which I think are still the highest selling of the series.
No, I think actually these are starting to, these are passing them. The DS games are.
Which makes sense.
From what I remember seeing that the red, blue, green in Japan, I guess, and then combined with the American sales, sold something like 10 million copies worldwide.
That's the The DS games are going to obliterate them.
Well, no, they still have to release in America, which is obviously a huge amount, has a huge amount of Pokemon fans. So I think they could easily do at least 3 million here. And then, of course, there's Europe and abroad. So I think they could. There's a good chance that that this one will become the most successful iteration of the Pokemon series yet. Yeah, now, is that a good thing? Eh.
Good for
because
Nintendo.
I really want to see the series evolve. I really don't want to see the same formula that they've been using for this series. I really want to see it go forward.
Well, it kind of has been evolving, but just within itself. I don't think it's really going outside of... Yeah, it's not really going outside of the Pokemon.
Exactly.
Thing,
I mean,
Game
Freak is a really talented developer, and I didn't know that until they released Drill Dozer, which reminded me, oh yeah, these guys really know how to make a game. And I think they've really been shackled down with Pokemon in that they've been they don't have any room to shine, and I think they really just need to let Game Freak do what they want with Pokemon, and let them push to the next level, whether that's in an MMO RPG realm, obviously not, but. You know, maybe take the online functionality way further. I don't know what it is, but this series really needs to evolve. Or, you know, I don't want to say it won't sell anymore because that's obviously not true. But I can't support a franchise like
that. I would love. I mean, everyone will obviously have to see an MMORPG, and maybe it'll come. Who knows?
Maybe that's that Wii game that was going to take online over the top.
Yeah, if any Wii game is going to take online over the top, it's Pokemon even before it's Smash Brothers.
I remember hearing someone say that they'll never do a real Pokemon console game because then it would overshadow the handheld games. And
no, you need the console game to say that the series is for real, because right now it's a handheld series.
Yeah.
But it's not really the all-encompassing series. It's just, you know, well, it's, you know, handheld, Game Boy series, DS series. It's not the series.
It's not Halo.
It's not a Halo.
Well, it sells more than Halo,
but
yeah. It's still not Halo level. It's not, you know, Metal Gear Solid. It's not Mario.
Right, right. It's not, you know, it's on a quote-unquote big gun in the sense that, you know, by announcing a Pokemon game, this is a megaton, mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
So, all right, well, that's the end of our news for this week, so we're going to go to a commercial and be right back with our community segments, Virtual Console, and a ton of listener mail.
Hey, everyone. This is Steven Rodriguez, director of Nintendo World Report. If you haven't heard yet, we're giving away Nintendo DS Lights and copies of Nintendogs Dalmatian and Friends DS games in our Valentine's Day Nintendogs DS giveaway. All you need to do to enter is read Nintendo World Report and listen to Radio Free Nintendo to find the 4 contest code words you'll need to submit your entry. If you get all 4 code words correct, you could win. The first code word for the Valentine's Day Nintendogs DS giveaway is puppy. P-U-P-P-Y. Puppy. Remember to check back to Nintendo World Report in the next week for all the code words, and tune in to next week's episode of Radio Free Nintendo for details on how to submit your entry. Good luck! Nintendo World Report's Valentine's Day Nintendogs DS Giveaway Contest is open to all legal residents of the United States and Canada only. Many will enter, only 10 will win. For official contest rules, visit www.nintendoworldreport.com.
Alright, welcome back everyone. We're going to start off this segment by talking about new virtual console releases. Last week's virtual console releases. First up, we have Mario Kart 64, the classic racing game, and now the second N64 game available on the virtual console.
Let's have more of those, please.
You know, I found it funny that Nintendo decided to release Mario Kart this week of all weeks, or last week, because you have Diddy Kong Racing coming out this week for the DS. And it seems that no matter what, Diddy Kong Racing is always going to be in the shadow of Mario Kart.
But there's always that group of people who insist it's better.
Well, those
it's
people
different.
Are wrong.
The only thing you can say for sure that is different.
Definitely.
Different in a bad way, maybe. I don't know.
No. Good or bad, it depends. I can say that the online features in Diddy Kong DS are way better than those in Mario Kart DS.
Well, it came out more than a year later. Of course it will be.
Yes, so that's the same argument for, well, Diddy Kong Racing came out a year later, Mario Kart 64, so it must be better.
Well, it isn't, though. But whatever, I'm not going to get into this argument now.
Quiet you. Anyways, what's next
game? It's a great game to play if you have friends around. Our next game is Comic Zone from Sega.
Comic Zone was cool, man.
It looked cool.
We talked about this a couple weeks ago when it was supposed to come out.
Yeah.
But yeah, apparently it's just incredibly hard and really cool looking.
Yeah, it's kind of like Beautiful Joe before it was Beautiful Joe.
Right.
So if you like,
I heard
Beautiful
it's
Joe,
ridiculously
like
hard
Comic
though.
Zone. Yeah.
And then,
it's like ridiculously hard.
Our next game is Sega's Bonanza Brothers.
Yeah.
I don't know anything about.
The game is interesting. It's a pretty cheap, basic Genesis game, but we made it recommended for fans because it's a little addicting. You have to go around through these like a building. It's like a split screen game, like co-op game, but it's always in the split screen, and you have to like steal certain items and get out within like a 3-minute time limit.
Sounds a lot like Toe Jam and Earl, where you're kind of working co-op.
Yeah, it's kind of like that. It's like a cross between Toe Jam and Earl and Spy vs. Spy.
If only for the inclusion of Mario Kart 64. If only for the inclusion of an N64 game, period.
That's right.
All right, so now we're going to move on into our listener mail. We're going to be answering three questions this week. First question is from Steve, and I will read it now. He says, "This sucks. I just sent in a good question a few days ago about the Virtual Console in Rare, and now I'll have to wait." I guess he just missed our deadline. So his question reads, "When the GameCube first came out, a couple of days after the Xbox, the systems were very different, and I believe the GameCube had a better lineup with Wave Race, Rogue Leader." He says Metroid Prime, but that game didn't come out until a year later. Monkey Ball and Smash Brothers, which came out maybe like two weeks after the GameCube came out. And he compares it to the Xbox's launch lineup of Fusion Frenzy, Oddworld, Project Gotham, and Azeric. Not knowing what both systems could really do, do you think consumers looked past the GameCube for the Xbox just because of Halo? I don't believe Halo is a good game, average tops, but it's really the only standout game for the Xbox. PS2 has almost every game the Xbox has. Do you think because of Halo, the GameCube fell and couldn't get back up in line?" And he goes on to say, "I believe that Halo is the only reason that the Xbox sold more systems than GameCube. I think it's sad a system has to rely on one game to succeed and not a very good one."
Okay, all right. First of all, GameCube didn't lose to Xbox because of Xbox.
Because
GameCube
of Halo.
Lost to GameCube. GameCube lost to Xbox because of GameCube. All right? It had so many problems in itself that any console probably would have taken it over.
Well, I would just like to first off refute that Radio Free Nintendo in no way states that Halo is an average game. Personally, I think it's great.
Halo is really good.
Yeah.
And I have actually a pretty strong opinion on this, that Halo and the Xbox were just the perfect combination, because the Halo launch line or the Xbox launch lineup, outside of Halo, it was pretty meh, and so the Halo is that one game people look to on the Xbox, and immediately people associated Halo to the Xbox. They associated Xbox to Halo. And before Microsoft moved it to the Xbox, it was just, it'll be another good PC shooter.
And before that, it was a Macintosh game.
Yeah, before that, it was even a Mac game. So there you go. It's like lost cause. But Halo is a really good game. There's no doubt about it. 5 million people bought the original. 6 million people got the sequel, at least. So that's 11 million people who like Halo. Or, 6 million, 7 million.
There's probably some overlap.
6 million people who like Halo.
But because Halo was such, way beyond any of the other launch games, everybody just kept talking about Halo because that was the only thing to talk about for the Xbox, really. And because of that, I would have to say that the game's success was not quite all done on its own. It had to do a lot with the launch circumstances.
Yeah, it was the only game out there.
Yes, because as we all know, during launch, you're going to play a lot of games that you would normally not play. Halo was a good game. It just kind of inflated to a little higher status because everybody played it.
Right. Like it or hate it, Halo has had a profound effect on the game industry.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Now, on the other side of the coin for Smash Brothers, let's just, Halo is the Xbox's multiplayer game. Smash Brothers is the GameCube's multiplayer game. Smash Brothers has sold through at least by now 6 million copies. 6 million copies. That's a lot.
That's Halo 2.
Yeah,
and the GameCube's multiplayer game did just as well as the Xbox's multiplayer game. So those kind of cancel each other out. The problem, I think, was there were other really good games on the GameCube at the time that it launched. So all the attention really wasn't on Smash Brothers, like all the attention was on Halo.
And Smash Brothers already existed. It wasn't this like brand new property that no one had ever heard of.
Exactly. So we all kind of knew what we were getting, and we got amazing, awesome game that's still amazing and awesome 5 years after the fact. And in fact, we played some Smash Brothers last night over at Dan's house. So, yeah, and so the reason why the GameCube fell was, like you said, it was the GameCube's fault. It wasn't because of one game on a different platform. You can't say that. There's no one game that has that much pull to totally bring down another system.
And another thing to mention is that a lot of people think that the Xbox really beat down the GameCube. The numbers are a lot closer than people think. I think it's, you know, the difference is maybe 2 to 2.5 million.
Yes, but the Xbox won mind share.
Yes, yeah. That's the most important thing. And when, you know, online, Xbox Live. Look at Xbox Live now.
True.
It's like the biggest thing in gaming, really.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, worldwide, the GameCube. Did the GameCube outsell the Xbox worldwide because of Japan?
I think so.
No, no.
Like I said,
the worldwide sales, the Xbox won worldwide, but it was very close.
Yeah, but that. But then again, the GameCube had some help in that regard because nobody bought the Xbox in Japan.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, the Xbox, it should be saying something about Nintendo that, you know, they were in second place, and here comes Microsoft out of the blue, and all of a sudden they're second. They're looking. Yeah. They're sitting pretty for the next gen.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, so our next question is from Shy Guy, and he asks, now that Konami is giving us a Teletubby clone, aka Dewey's Adventure, for the Wii, is the Wii's future going to be even more kiddie than the GameCube? Now, I'd also like to state at the beginning of this one that Shy Guy's opinions in no way reflect our own, and that we here do not really believe Dewey's Adventure is a Teletubby clone. I don't see where he's getting that from, but it certainly does look bright and young.
The head kind of resembles that Teletubby thing that the Nintendo.
I think it looks like a droplet of water, because that's what it is, but whatever.
That's what it is, yeah.
Well, this is what I think. I think that no matter what happens from this point on, there will always be kid-oriented games on the Nintendo platform.
Mm-hmm.
That's just mm-hmm. what's going to happen. It's just the question is, will other publishers, will other companies bring in the games for the other end of the age spectrum, the higher end of the age spectrum, more mature titles to balance it. It's not about how many kids games are on the platform or not. It's what the variety is. Does the system have games for all ages?
Mm-hmm.
Because even the PS2 had kids games. PS2 and the Xbox. PS2 and the GameCube. So all the kids games that came out on the GameCube are also on the PlayStation 2.
Right.
It's just that there weren't the shooters that we got in the PS2 and Xbox. There weren't the RPGs we got in the PS2 and the Xbox. There weren't the, GTA.
We need GTA on Wii. That's what we need.
That'd be nice.
That'd be great.
But, yeah, just this one game, even though it's fairly high profile, it's just one game.
High profile now, yeah. But we were looking at, EA's got a whole bunch of games coming out, and they've got SSX, which is pretty much whole spectrum of everyone, and then they've got The Godfather, which who knows if it'll be any good, but the point is it's The Godfather. It's, it's a very mature subject.
Is that rated M?
I think so.
Is it rated M?
Yeah, but here's a question about SSX Blur. I was looking at the trailer, and this thought creeped into my mind, is that why do they have to go with this cartoony stylish look? Why not have some more realistic people like an SSX 3?
Because the graphics probably wouldn't look
good. No, I mean, they looked fine on SSX 3.
SSX 3.
It's a little interesting. I think they're trying to appeal to the Japanese market more, like we're seeing with My Sims and SimCity with anime Will Wright.
Yeah.
That's a good way of thinking.
But SSX, I don't think, has ever been that huge in Japan, but I don't really think it really takes anything out of SSX. I don't think it makes it more kiddie, just because the characters look a little younger. Anyway, our final question of the week comes from Nightmare, and this is a bit of a long one, so I'm just going to go through it. He says, the magic price for games is no more than $20. Just think how many people will buy a game that is $20. The PS2 has over 100 million systems out there. New titles struggle to reach the $1 million mark in sales. Sales are not even reaching 10% of system owners. I would spend $20 on a game without batting an eye. Selling more games equals higher profit margins. Sony and Microsoft and Nintendo need to realize this and stop developing hardware that they take a loss on and pass the buck to the consumer. Charging $60 for a game is crazy because you're trying to recoup development cost of your machine. What are your thoughts?
Nintendo doesn't lose money on their hardware.
They never have.
They may cut it really close. I think when the GameCubes first came out, they were selling them at cost or something around there. Or something came out that they were losing like 50 cents or something, but they really weren't. Nintendo's always been making a profit on hardware, essentially.
Yeah, Nintendo, like any other business that's got a head on their shoulders will sell all of their products and make a profit off of them.
Well, I don't know. There's a ton of products out there on the razor blade model now. I mean, obviously there's razors, and then there's a million different cleaning products on the same market right now. The Swiffer is the exact same thing. Those new toilet brush things where you replace the head, the wand costs like 50 cents, and then the little replacement heads cost like $40.
Yeah, but those are American corporations. We're talking about a very, very, very Japanese company, Nintendo. Yeah. So, like, they'll probably look at models like that and say, what are you guys doing?
It works for Sony, though.
Well, I do remember a couple years back when Visual Concepts was still making the 2K football games. 2K5, I believe.
Oh, yeah, the last 2K games with the ESPN branding.
Right, with the ESPN 2K5, it was priced at $20. And, of course, I think it ended up selling really, really well, and then EA got the exclusive NFL license. So
they also got the. It also was one of the things that got EA the exclusive ESPN license. Don't forget that they've got that.
Yeah,
too.
They've got it all now.
For like 15 years, which is ridiculous.
Yeah.
But one of the reasons why ESPN left Take-Two was that they did not want to see their brand being sold for a mere $20.
Yeah, there's some certain brand equity out there.
It was not a premium price for a premium brand.
Yeah.
And they didn't like that very much. But the question at hand, of course, is why don't more games come out $20 cheaper, like cheaper than the 50 or 60 everybody else is charging?
Yeah, they're expensive to make.
They are expensive to make. And the problem is publishers do not want to risk releasing a game at a low price.
Right, unless they're selling it at Burger
having
King.
Having it not sell as well. Well,
but those are obviously very different. Those are basically games that you could have downloaded off Xbox Live Arcade.
Yeah.
Yeah, but think of it this way. You're a publisher. You're spending $20 million on a game.
That's very generously low, too, I think, that price.
Yeah, that's a generously low figure.
Yeah, so, I remember Lost Planet said they spent something like $40 million.
Yeah, but half of that was marketing.
Yeah, they're...
So. But still, I mean, it's still in the budget.
Yeah, but right. I mean... Yeah. I mean, I'm talking all-encompassing. You spend $20 million to get a game on a shelf, period.
Yeah.
And you sell it for, I don't know what, regular 50,
60
50
bucks.
Okay, you sell a million copies, well, 50 bucks. We'll just pretend we're in the, we're talking GameCube for now. So you sell it for 50 bucks, you sell a million copies, that's, what is that, 5 million, 50 million bucks prop revenue, and you make money off of that game. So let's say you sell for 20 bucks, and you only sell a million anyway. Well, then what? You break even. Barely, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yes, more people will buy $20 games, but if they buy the same amount of what they would have bought if it was 50 bucks, then you just lost.
And really what you want to look at is you want to get the game into multiple markets. You can sell it for $50 when it comes out, and plenty of people will buy it. All the people in the market for that game will buy it at that price. And then half a year later, you bring the price down to 20, and it breathes new life into your old product and reaches to an entirely brand new market, and you sell even more copies.
Well, this is a very interesting question, because Nintendo President Satoru Iwata is on record as going to say that this model is very unhealthy for the game industry, because people are being trained to just wait for the price drop. So, the reason why game prices are going up is because not as many people are buying them at full price. So they need to raise the price.
And they're also figuring out ways, like if you add $10 and give them a DVD with a making of, you know, that did definitely not cost you an extra $10 to make, so it's a lot of extra profit margin.
Yeah, those collector's editions and, you know, the Halo 3 Legendary.
Comes
Halo
3 Legendary, head, you get a helmet with it.
Those are kind of really more gestures toward the fan base more.
They're taking a cue from DVD, though.
Off them too,
that's where, you know, you could sell a DVD for $15 or add another disc in and sell it for $20. And the profit margin on the two-disc edition is a lot higher than the profit margin on the one-disc edition.
Like the best example of this, of what Nintendo is really saying, is that, let's go back to Smash Brothers. $50 when it came out. A year later, $50. A year, 2 years later, still $50. 3 years later,
it kept selling.
Still $50. Yeah. Bucks. And then when they price dropped it to players,
$30.
$30, not cheap. $20. It's still $30 new, and people are still buying it.
Yeah.
So the end thing you can get out of this is make games that people will want to buy at the price you set it.
Right. It seems it's almost a little silly that every game comes out with at $50 or $60. They all come out at the same price, and it really ought to be more of a calculated price where, you know, this game costs this much to make, and we think it's going to have this appeal, and we think this many people are going to buy it, so this is what we're pricing it at.
Well, yeah, I don't know about that, because what do you have at the opposite end of the spectrum? If you have, like, a modern-day Shenmue that costs you, you know, millions upon millions of dollars to make, are you going to sell that for $90?
If it's worth it, but no one likes Shenmue, so... But, I mean, you could sell Halo. Let's look at it this way. What if you take Halo 3? They could charge $70 for that game because it's a premium title. It's got a billion features. It took forever to make. It's got a huge budget, and it's the kind of brand that people would pay $70 for. No one's going to say, no, I'm not buying Halo because it costs $10 more than, I don't know, any other Xbox 360 game.
Don't all of Microsoft's first-party games come out at $50?
I think Halo 3 is
going to be 52.
Maybe. I don't know.
Gears of War is 60 flat, well, so...
That's a second-party game, though.
Yeah, but it's published by Microsoft.
Yeah, it is. Well, I don't know how Microsoft is doing it. I know Sony was doing that for a while, where all their first-party games were coming out at 40. Because they don't have to pay a licensing fee to themselves, basically.
Yeah, isn't that strange that there's such a gap between the affordable games and the regular-priced games? There's not that many $30 and $40 games.
Yeah. I think I'd like to see more of a move to a calculated price where this is how much this game should be worth and this is how much this game should be worth.
I remember when Rockstar's Table Tennis came out on the 360, it was proposed as like, it's a budget game, but it's still $30. Like,
$40.
There you go. Like, $40 is now a bargain price? What the hell's going on here?
That's because Microsoft doesn't want any of their Xbox 360 games, at least in the early going, to be considered quote-unquote
budget. Yeah, it's a premium system. You don't want to give it the market view of having it look cheap by having cheap games on it.
Burger King.
Those are obviously an exception.
You know the Burger King games went triple platinum?
Yeah.
Yeah, but you can sell anything for $4 and have it go triple platinum.
And you know, that is actually a brilliant marketing campaign on the part of
Burger
King.
Oh yeah, absolutely. My friends, like, I have a ton of friends who bought those games and who would like
them. I would buy it for $4? So... Why not? You're not going to get any cognitive dissonance after you buy that. It's like, oh, I spent $4. Who cares if it sucks? But if you spend $60 and something sucks, you got burned.
Well, okay, here's the ultimate example then. You sell a game at $4. You sell 3 million copies. That's $12 million.
Uh-huh.
Those games, they probably cost less than $12 million to make.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe $12 million
total. Any other game... Yeah, if you take any other game in the gaming industry, and if you only get $12 million off of the game you made, you're not going to be making any money. That's why publishers need, at least they think they need to charge $50 or $60 for a game, because they need to get the money back as soon as
possible. Well, it's also while we're getting a lot more of this, like on the flip side, along with the Burger King games, we're getting a lot of this episodic content and downloadable games that cost less to make, and they cost less to buy, but they're a good way to fund a larger budget title.
Yes, and the gaming industry is evolving with the advent of the old online console, and Microsoft's really spearheading this, which is good because they've got experience in that area, and eventually the future is going to be kind of like how the movie industry works. I feel that you go to a movie theater for the premium experience of watching a movie when it comes out, and then later you can catch it on DVD. Well, I feel that how the gaming industry is going to go is that you can still buy like a premium disc with the game, like how they're coming out now. But then a couple months later, you can just download the game. So that'd be like the release of DVD. And then, of course, there'll be some games that just come out download only.
Yeah, though I think storage...
As there are direct-to-DVD
storage capacity releases. Throws a bit of a wrench in all of that. Like with movies, you know, a DVD is a DVD and it takes up a couple gigs, but it's not like a game that takes up some massive amount of data.
You know how Sony is all touting that within a couple of generations we're just going to be downloading all our games anyway? Not when all your games are 50 gigabytes.
Well, I mean, we are going to have a lot more speed and a lot better storage capacity in, you know, 10 years. But, you know, we're also going to have better textures and everything else.
Yeah,
take
it all
more
catches
space.
Up, you know?
I mean, games are pretty much the bleeding edge of computer technology. You know, if you look at any computer, a high-end one, the only reason it's ever designed to be, at least as far as a consumer-grade thing, the only reason it's ever designed to be high-end is so it can play video games. No one's putting 4 gigabytes of memory and, you know, 3 terabytes of hard drive space in their computer to run Microsoft Office.
Well, there's also the video production side of it.
But I say consumer-grade. You know, professional, obviously, if we're looking in a corporate world, obviously you need that kind of power to run, you know, video processing and that kind of stuff. But for person at home, it's basically games.
Very true. Yeah. I mean, who in their right mind would spend $1,300 on a PC?
Yeah, and
besides me.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyways, I think.
Yeah, I guess.
I think that wraps it up.
Yeah, I really liked that question. It was a good discussion. Yeah. So, if you have any questions for us, please send them to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. We'll be back next week with a real feature segment. We're going to be talking about, in the spirit of the Valentine's Day holiday, we're going to be talking about games that you can play with your girlfriend, or if you're a female, games that you can play with your boyfriend. Games you can play with your significant other. I've been your host, Mike Sklenz. My compatriots this week have been previews editor Carl Castaneda and site director Steven Rodriguez, and we will see you next week. Say goodbye.
Bye, everybody.